coming to you from my apartment that doubles as a podcast recording studio. This is What Should I Do With My Life with Steph Horowitz. I'm Steph Horowitz. Thanks for joining me. This podcast is about how none of us know what we're doing. None of us have it figured out. No matter if you seem like you have it all together, you really don't, so be honest. We're going to talk about real stories from real people, their experiences, how they're figuring it out. From career pivots to being in the same industry for 40 years, we're going to hash this thing out so we can all find more meaning and passion in our work and day-to-days. Hi, welcome to What Should I Do With My Life? Super excited for you to meet Noah Matz, a boss of a human being. Noah is a startup psychologist and operating partner at F2 Capital, and she's a founder herself, having previously launched a boutique startup consulting firm called Team Diligent. We have so much to learn from her and her experiences. She's making a splash in the startup and VC ecosystem. I'm personally fascinated by what she does. I always felt really interested in the human and people aspect of organization and businesses, team dynamics. This is her jam. Noah is so true to herself. She knows herself very, very well, her strengths, her skills, what she needs in order to feel like she's alive and flying. It's super admirable. You'll understand what I mean soon. She floats like a butterfly. She stings like a bee. This is Noah Matz. Noah, welcome to What Should I Do With My Life? Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Stephanie.
I'm super pumped. You know that I fangirl over you. It's no surprise. But something I don't think you know before we start is that after I took your class in Jolt, I called my dad and I was freaking out about the session with you. And I was going on and on. And he was like, Stephanie, maybe one day you can work for Noah. Maybe one day you'll do, you know, similar work she does in America. You'll work together. So my dad has really big plans for the two of us, just so you know.
I have a list of people that I know that when I'll do my next big thing, I'll have them with me. So added to the list, Stephanie.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm freaking out. Well, that's an honor. So I guess my dad's helping me realize these dreams. So thank you, Noah. Again, super excited to have you here, hear your story, hear about what you're doing. Your work is fascinating. Your story is for sure fascinating. And you also have a lot of insights and expertise that will be really interesting for our listeners. So I think we should just dive in, go for it. So in one sentence, Noah, what do you do?
In one sentence, I'm a social psychologist in training, an operating partner at F2 Venture Capital, the amazing and wonderful VC fund, and I'm a startup psychologist in practice.
Okay, so you clearly have your hands full. There's a lot going on. You're also a startup psychologist. You're an operating partner at F2 Capital. So what does it mean to be a startup psychologist?
Mm-hmm. Well, startup psychologist, it means that This title, I gave it to myself as a branding. It's very important to note that because I was not giving this. No one taught me how to be a startup psychologist. That's important in terms of ethics. I'm a social psychologist. And being a startup psychologist, I referred to myself like that because it makes what I do a bit clearer. But the question that you asked me, what is it that you do, is a question that I'm being asked, I think, 3 or 4 times a day. What is it that you do? So my work is divided in two. Today in my work at F2, and also before I was an operating partner at F2, when I had my Team Diligent, my own operation, it was the same, but today it's much clearer. So I have the pre-investment and the post-investment. On the pre-investment aspects, it's more of the due diligence. It's like the psychological team due diligence. I much rather use the team due diligence frame. It's less intimidating. My job is to make sure that this team has what it takes to make it in the entrepreneurial path. Their skills are complementary, their emotional regulation is high, the intrinsic motivation is high, that they have sufficient skills in the team in order to make it, that the values in which they follow are similar to the values that we as a team follow, and there is general compatibility between us and the team and between the team to themselves. And obviously to the market they're about to approach. So that's the pre. The post-investment is the much more exciting part, I believe, because that's the part where I truly connect with the founders. It's being their first phone call when benchmarking for a new executive in their company for equity and salary up to... We had a huge fight in our founding team, and one of the founders are about to leave the company. So it ranges that extreme. I find myself working most of my day with founders if it's one-on-one sessions, ventilation sessions, a bit more psychological sessions, up until working on the team structure, how the organizational structure of the company should look like in order to support their scale. So really varies changes. And also I'm working on our team dynamics in the fund in order for us to always be this master team.
Super fascinating. And for me personally, I find it very interesting. I studied organizational behavior and development, just the whole concept of team dynamics and working together and motivation and psychology. People, all that really interests me. So a few questions. First of all, you said that you gave yourself, you gave yourself the title startup psychologist. And for me, and I'm sure a lot of listeners who might deal with imposter syndrome or feel like, who am I? I'm curious just how the experience was for you, because you're an expert, you're in demand, you're growing and flourishing in your career. And you gave yourself a name that you didn't necessarily, you said, I didn't see that before and someone taught me how to do that, but that's what I am. So what was it like for you to call yourself a startup psychologist?
You're touching a very sensitive spot, because when I speak to psychologists, specifically with social psychologists that are now in the midst of the training that I was a part of, in the master's of social psychology, one of the questions that I'm being asked the most is, how do you know you have the expertise to do it? How do you know you have what it takes? How could you have the courage to call yourself a startup psychologist? Even on a sum note, who do you think you are to call yourself a startup psychologist? So I think it's a mix of really to get over this imposter syndrome and the fact that I'm a part of an industry, that this is the essence of this industry of entrepreneurship, is who the fuck do you think you are? That's all it is. That's all it's about. Who the fuck do you think you are to raise $5 million and $12 million pre-money valuation? You know, I'm sorry, I don't want to curse. The presentation that you have.
You can. Yeah. I'll just put an explicit label on the on the episode. Let it out.
So who the fuck do you think you are? But this is the essence of this industry. And this is how great talent is being revealed. And this is how amazing unicorns are happening. And this is how this world is evolving. This is why we're Startup Nation. You know, yeah, it takes courage. And it takes some time of hard work and a time of you doubting yourself. Wow. You know, it's constant doubting, constant. You get up in the morning. This is why I can truly relate to our founders, because I've been through it. If I haven't been through it, then I couldn't, you know, again, who do you think you are? You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what I'm going through, but I do. So you wake up in the morning and you say, no, this is not going anywhere. This is not, no, I don't know what I'm doing. And then at noon, you feel like you're at the top of the world. And then at lunch, and then in the afternoon again. But eventually, it's getting there to a point when you know you're good is about collecting successes, like gather successes, and to see that you're right, and to see that you make an impact, and to see that people actually appreciate what you say, and you can actually help individuals. And that's what drove me, because I saw that I can make an impact. And it's important. What I do is important.
Oh my God. Okay. Yes, yes, yes to everything you said. I really appreciate the realness, because you are extremely accomplished. You're just going up and up, and you are human, and you've had those moments of self-doubt, and it's things you're dealing with every day, like you said, where people say, what does that exactly mean, a startup psychologist? I thought it was interesting what you said about working with founders, which are all people who are kind of taking a leap of faith in themselves and their idea. And you did that. You're an entrepreneur yourself. You started Team Diligent. You started your own business. So it's super critical that you can relate to founders on that level. What specifically got you interested in working with startups? Because as you said, with social psychology, there are a few different, of course, there are many different things you can do. Maybe you were thinking about HR, you talked a bit about organizational development or consulting. Did you know immediately, oh, I want to work with startups? Yeah. Like, what was it about startups?
Right. So let's talk briefly about the path.
Great.
I never searched for a career path. I searched for what is interesting here. Give it to me. What is interesting? This is ringing. No. This is interesting. No, this is interesting. Mm-hmm. Yes, let's do that. Let's go for it. Let's search. Okay, okay. Searching. This is interesting. In this aspect, the sub aspect of this aspect is interesting. Okay, let's go there. This is what I've been doing, like sniffing, like my dog sniffing. Interesting. Not interesting. So I went over the places where I get excited. And in my work, I understand, even today, I need to get excited about things. And this, I think that's my strongest skill. Go where is interesting for you. So on a practical level, so I am, when I took my master's, I got an email from the entrepreneurship club at the IDC saying a new program, a female entrepreneurship program. Our beloved Inbar Jacobi was
Shout out.
Yeah, this is where our story connects, because our beloved Inbar Jacobi was the head of this program, Artemis it was called. I said, wow, this is interesting. I applied, obviously Inbar accepted me. And Inbar was my gate to the person I am today, because she got me in. And I took it so seriously because I was so passionate about it. It was so interesting for me. And each of us had to build his own venture, like not a real venture, like theoretically build a venture. And I was finding myself very dominant in this. And then Inbar offered me to take my own next year, to take my own program. So I thought about it and I said, okay, I'll give you a counter offer. That's important, okay? I'll give you a counter offer. I want to be a psychologist. I don't want to be a program manager. This is not my path. So I will give you a counter offer saying, I want to take a different position. Mm-hmm. I want to be team development. I want to be the one to develop the team in the headquarters of the club and for the program themselves. Yeah, for the students and for the headquarters. So Inbal took it to her partner and they said, okay, let's do it. So this is where it started. And this is where I found out that we have two stakeholders in the entrepreneurship ecosystem. We have entrepreneurs, founders, and we have the investors, both in need for a psychologist that understand the business language, that understand the specific needs. I mean, there are endless amazing psychologists, like high level psychologists in Israel. But the fact is that the founders need and the investors need someone that understands the jargon, the business aspect, the business context. So I took this and I developed my methodology. I launched Team Diligent. I started my value proposition. Building my value proposition took a long time to be accurate. And after a year or so, everything just exploded, like in a positive way.
Yeah, I don't think I realized that story with Inbar. I don't think I realized that. Shout out to Inbar, always connecting, bringing people together, dear friend and colleague. And I really like what you said about the counter offer. I think, and I know you emphasized it, and I just feel like this concept of a counter offer and making something fit to what you're looking to do for your agenda. Like, how can I bring value to you? But also I'm looking to do X, Y, Z. Maybe here we can, you know, work together to compromise and make that happen. So I really more like than that.
It's more than compromise. Something was suggested to me. I have to take it and not consider the offer as is. Mm-hmm. I have to consider the offer, take some of it and rebuild it, reconstruct it in a way. You have to work on it. It takes time. It takes attention. You have to think, you have to work on that. But the idea is that we want to rebuild and reconstruct our life and take control of our life. Nothing has to be just as it's presented to us. Try to adjust it to your needs.
I love that. That's really, really good advice. And we can all take that in any aspect of anything. Everything is some kind of proposal at the end of the day. Clearly, your work is extremely important and impactful for these organizations, for these teams, also for the company itself, also for the investors backing that company. And I'm wondering if having, like for F2 to have a startup psychologist as an operating partner, is that something we see in other venture capital funds? Is this concept and importance of the team dynamic and the emphasis on the team versus their idea? Do we see that in other VCs? Is this relatively new? Are you starting the trend? I asked you a lot of questions and I know I need to ask you one at a time, but you know.
I think I'm okay. First and foremost, credit to my partners, Johnny and Barak, for being bold on this, although we've been working together for quite a while, for a few years now, they know what they're getting, right? It's not a surprise box. But for being courage and saying, okay, we're going to take a partner who is a psychologist. That's I think that's a new trend. I think this, I see the amount of interest there is in what I do. And I really do feel this is the beginning of a trend. We do have operating partners. For example, there's a venture firm called Kosla Ventures in the US. And they do have an operating partner who is a coach. But the thing is, he's not from the mental health system. He's not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. He was a CEO himself. And today, and we see that a lot, former executive, former entrepreneurs doing this shift now to coach founders, to coach executives. So it does exist, but in a different context. And I think that having a psychologist everywhere in venture capital funds, in companies, in everywhere, it's needed and it will happen.
You're the trendsetter. That's pretty exciting. Not surprised at all, but it definitely, what you said, the interest in what you're doing. Oh, this is really important. And you're starting something. What I said before about the people as opposed to the idea, I think I read something you wrote where it's just more important that like investors looking at the team and then the idea, and they'd rather a very strong team that checks off all those boxes and an okay idea versus a weak team and a very, very strong idea. So I think that's super interesting. How did you know that being a startup psychologist is something you wanted to do?
Yeah, well, I didn't. And I think the best answer I can give to this is I was very, very attentive to what I feel and my intuitions, because I've done some non-conformative moves in the past few years. And it's amazing how things came about. I mean, how my life look like now. And if you would have met me a few years ago, it wouldn't look as clear and glamorous, because I was in the midst of climbing this mountain with my bare hands, and it wasn't so wasn't glamorous at all. And I think all through this journey, I just listened to my intuitions. This is yes for me. This is no for me. It's good for me here. It's not so good for me here. Shifting, changing until I found this. I mean, my new family.
Were you always so intuitive and in touch with yourself, knew what you wanted, listened to yourself, or did that develop over time?
Always. This is for good and for bad, because I say that we have receptors on our tongue, on our eyes, our entire body's filled with receptors. And I give this metaphor of my entire body is filled with receptors, like all over me, da, 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 all over my body. And my receptors are very, very strong, I think, relatively to the average person. There are people that their receptors are just very strong. And the thing is with me that I listen to them. If there's someone that I don't feel right next to him, I immediately feel it in my body. Like my body's speaking to me and my gut is speaking to me. My intuition is speaking with me all the time. And I think the fact that I've been listening to it and I've learned how to adjust this intuition made it so strong today.
That's really interesting and profound. I don't know if a lot of people have that. So I feel like it's kind of rare for you. And it makes sense that using that, you're so good at what you do. And for your experience, so you've been working obviously a lot with startups and venture capitalists. Now you are a venture capitalist. And I presume you're often the only woman in the room many a time. And I'm wondering what that's like for you, first of all. What's that experience like for you?
Yeah, I really did. I'm guessing this is not the answer you expected, but I really got used to it, because it is what it is. I'm most of the time the only woman in the room. I'm most of the time working with white male 20 to 35 year olds. And I even feel to sometimes that I don't even know how to work with female founders. It's a skill that I will have to develop because I just didn't get to work with enough of those. And it's different, you know, it's different to work. There's different complexities to working with a female than working with a male. And I always pay attention to it. I always pay attention to the fact that I'm the only person, only woman in the room out of 8 men. And the most of the establishments that provide the money for the VC funds are also male.
Yeah.
So the men are holding the money mm-hmm. to some extent.
And we know studies have said, I'm not going to cite or quote anything, but I know I've read it in a few different places and I'm not going to botch it right now, but teams that have individuals from, you know, different backgrounds, different kinds of people, I guess you could call it a diverse workforce, but I know I was just reading something today, how calling something diverse itself can be controversial. Yeah. So I don't want to offend anyone, but you know, you said you're dealing with a lot of teams that are primarily men, white men, similar age group. And research is saying that for teams to succeed or companies to succeed, they're more likely to be innovative if their team is made up of different kinds of people. So I'm wondering what you think about that, and how can we encourage that in the VC startup space?
Well, I definitely can see that because in our team, we're highly diverse in terms of, we have like 50-50% male, female, and we have our Natalie that she's from South Africa, and Tal is from South Africa, and John is from South Africa, and Barak is from the US, and Natalie also used to live in London. So we're very much diverse, and I see how creative we are. We are highly creative. I mean, sometimes I'm just saying, okay, I can't take this to the entire team because I'm going to have so many ideas. I'm not going to know what to choose. So I'm going to wait. I'm going to take the advice of one or two people use that creativity because we are highly creative in our team. So yes, I can see it firsthand. I think it's a lot about courage. You know, we talked about the imposter syndrome. Say, just fuck it. I'm good enough. I know what I do. I'm trained to not to do the specific thing that I do, but I'm trained. I'm a trained psychologist and I'm good. And speak up. And to something that I've witnessed a lot is the information gaps. Women are highly bugged by the fact that they have information gaps. And if I don't have enough information, then I can't carry on. I'm not good enough. I have to first fill out my information gaps. This is something that we see less in men. Those are my thoughts, like cluttered thoughts.
No, those are totally valid, interesting thoughts. There's a lot, you know, we could do a whole episode just on that itself.
Yeah.
There's a lot to it for sure. It reminded me just a bit with like when it comes to asking for a raise, just talking with my friends who are women versus my friends who are men when it comes to money and worthiness and like, do I really deserve this raise? Should I ask for it? Is it chutzpah if I ask for this kind of raise? And the attitudes sound so very different when I'm having those kind of conversations with my male friends and my female friends. And I think it's all related when it comes to the worth and go for it and just do it and believing in yourself.
And it starts by saying to your girl, your baby girl at the Gina playground. And by saying, no, Tizari, no, be careful. Okay, mm-hmm. Be careful. No, this is dangerous. To let them carry their own stuff and evolve their thoughts of their own and have an opinion on things. And your opinion matters. What do you think? Oh, that's very interesting. What can you do with that? Not signaling that the world is dangerous, but the world is interesting.
I like that a lot. Switching gears just a little, but of course it's still about you and your work. At the end of the week, you put your feet up, you have a glass of wine, you're feeling really good that it was a great week at F2 and for your work. What happened? What does that mean?
It's for sure a week that I feel like I deepened the relationships with the founders. As much as I'm able to deepen the relationships for myself, I'm more able to create value for them and help them and support them and be a significant part of their journey. So for sure, a week where I had significant conversations, intimate conversations, a week where I got to learn more and develop myself on more of the aspects that I feel that I'm weaker, like finance and business, to get stronger. Because, you know, I'm the weak link on my team on the finance business aspects, because, you know, they're all sharks here on my team. So I always feel like I have a lot to learn and I want to be stronger in that. So for me, a good week was also a week where I grew on that aspect.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it speaks to what you're saying, that you're looking for the excitement, something different, grow. You want to feel like you're learning and that you're having impact. You made it clear that that's important to you.
Right.
I wish I could talk to you literally all day. I want to ask you a few questions that I think could be really beneficial for our listeners. The first thing I'm thinking of is a lot of people listening to the podcast are trying to figure out their passions, do work they love, feel good doing it. So what do you think are the ingredients needed for someone to feel satisfied at work?
Wow, that's a huge question. You know, I think for each of us is so different. I need change. I need to be in movement. I need to feel excited. I need to feel innovative. I need to feel like I have wings, you know? I carry this, my husband got it for me, this necklace of a butterfly. I need to feel that I'm the butterfly that I was born to be.
I love that.
It's what? What do you want
to say? I love that.
Yeah. And yeah. It's funny because I'm sitting on this tower in the center of Tel Aviv in a financial institute, you know? But still, I feel like I'm alive. This is what I need. And my partners and my team is realizing this. This is what Noah needs. Let's give her that. And this is why I've chosen this team for various reasons, but also for this reason, because here I feel I can be myself. I can explore and I need to explore. Now, for each of us is different. There are people that need the structure. This is where they bloom in structure. When they know what is their order of the day and they know what's to come and they know what to expect. And for each of us is different. You need to listen again to your intuition and get to know yourself and find, it's not easy. I'm saying this as if it's easy, but listen to yourself and find the right environment for you. And when you're facing a new opportunity or a new workplace, step into this workplace, speak to people who work there, understand what it's like there. Would it be good for you? Would you feel alive there? And for the managers, I will say, being a good manager is understanding what the motivations and the agendas of each individual you are managing is not one size fits all. The manager has his responsibility, but we mostly have responsibility for ourselves.
Yeah, that's really good advice. It's a lot of, it's not soul searching, but it's being honest with yourself and sitting with yourself and really asking those questions. Do I need this kind of environment? Do I need that? Do I work best when I'm independent and I love being independent and free? Do I like the structure? I think that's a really good point. And I feel like it starts with pen and paper with yourself. And then, like you said, talking to people, asking questions, finding out the culture, finding out about why people are there. I mean, of course, like you said, it's going to be different for anyone. And I really like it's not a one size fits all approach for managers. And of course we have been talking a lot about how you work with entrepreneurs. Based on the entrepreneurs and founders you work with, do you feel like someone is born an entrepreneur? Is it a special kind of person? Can anyone develop these qualities?
I think some of us has more of a tendency to it, meaning you have to be adventurous. You have to seek for the unknown. You have to love the unknown. You have to feel confident in the mystery. Have strong emotional regulation, meaning the ability to regulate yourself versus change, versus pain, frustration, challenge, failure. Did I say failure? So failure. We don't all have that. And some of us, we can work to get this a stronger suit in ourselves, But there are people that just, they don't want this headache. They need the structure. They need the known. And this is who they are. And this is who they've always been. And this was the kind of people that I believe will not flourish in a startup environment.
Something that I was thinking about is I have some friends who are in a job and they love the work, but they are just so over the people and it's a bad working environment. They love the job itself, but the people, they're not having it. Maybe the people suck, bring down the morale. It's a toxic work environment. And then I know people who are doing a job that's but they love the people. They're excited to go to work because of the people. How important are the people when it comes to someone being happy to go to work every day?
Yo, are you serious to ask me this question? Of course I will say the people. I will say that it's always about
you. You, a social psychologist, you'd say the people?
Nah, get out of here. Look, if you're doing something you are bored with, you hate, but sitting around you people you love, then it's just not enough. I mean, at least for me. But again, who are the kind of person you are? You have to be true to yourself. Who are the kind of person you are? Mm-hmm. Are you the kind of person that you care about what you do, that you care about professional development, that you have a trajectory, or do you have a vision where you want to see yourself? Then you cannot compromise only on the people. You just cannot, because you'll never feel whole. You'll always feel like you missed out on something. And when you will be looking back, you will say, how did I waste my life like this? Vice versa. If you hate the people, then it's a misery. It's just misery. And I'm just the kind of person that will never compromise, you know, not on relationships, not on work. And sometimes it's not for the best of me. I mean, I tend to walk away. If I experience something as stuck, I just will walk away. You're not going to see me there. Bye. I'm going.
We all need your attitude. We all need that confidence. We do. Really?
Yeah. I'm not that confident everywhere. Yeah. I'm not. Yeah. I mean, do not compromise. We're in different stages in life. Sometimes in life right now, what I need is to be with great people. This is what I need right now for my sense of security, for my sense of well-being. This is what I need right now. And you shut up, everyone. This is what I need. When I get to a point, okay, now I feel like I'm strong enough to make the change, then make the change. Make the change. Don't wait.
Yeah. Oh, my neighbors. Do you hear them? Imale, imale. All right. Moving through that. Any listeners who are thinking of starting their own venture need to build a team and they need to choose teammates. What are three? Let's choose three. Three things they should think about when selecting a co-founder, for example.
Yeah, well, we're about to launch an article about that. So stay tuned. It's going to be on the F2 VC Medium or my own Medium. It's going to be in my own Medium, I think.
Perfect.
So stay tuned for who's interested in that. So the few things I'm going to say is skill versus chemistry. The first tick should be skills. Meaning, if this person that I'm about to choose as my co-founder doesn't have complementary skills, plus relevant skills for the startups we're about to launch, then he's not an adequate co-founder. Don't even go to meet him because it's just not relevant to you. He has to have something that you don't have, and this thing must be relevant for what you're gonna do together. After you tick that, you must tick the chemistry. If you don't tick the chemistry, then don't go for it. Even if the person on a skill level is perfect for you, and this could be a bonanza thanks to him and his skills, you don't care. Because you need to feel you have an alignment. That's first. That takes us to the second aspect. How do you know that we have alignment? We're gonna do a trial period. We're first gonna meet a few times over coffee, over drinks. I'm gonna call around gently to people that I know that knows him, to ask who the kind of person he is, how does he work, how does he talk, how does he walk, etc. And then we're going to establish a trial period. We're going to say, okay, now we're going to work together for 2 months. It's going to be, it can be like after hours, over like evening nights and weekends. Work together, feel one another, feel how do we experience failure, how do we experience challenges, how do we interact, how do we solve problems, and try this time. Now, most likely, you will understand this is not working. And that's good. That means it was a productive trial period. And you're going to move on to the next potential cohort. So that's the second. The third one, I would say, is set expectations. Talk about everything you can imagine. How much effort do you want to put in your day-to-day? What kind of business do you want to build? Would it be a lifestyle business? Would it be a venture? Would it be a VC-backed? Would it be all the way to the IPO or a big exit, a small exit? Where are you heading? Talk about all that. How much time do you want to spend with family? What side of the company is going to be? How much salary do you want to pull in the first few years? Everything. Those are very important aspects of building the infrastructure for this team.
Yeah, that's really good, concrete advice that anyone can take. Thanks for sharing that. We got the expert on the show. Noah, if someone came to you stressed, I don't know what I should do with my life, I don't know what my passion is, where do they start? What's the first thing they should do?
What do you do best? What do you do best? What are you best at? After what do you do best, what do you love? Don't tell me people. People is not an answer. What are you good at? I'm good with people. That's not an answer. 50% of the people on earth are good with people.
When you say find out what you're best at or what you love, couldn't those be two different things?
Yes, yes, yes. That's a problem. That's a problem. We're not necessarily able to address this problem specifically right now.
Right.
But I think we should always go with our passion. And if you're not good enough with what you love, perhaps you can work on it. Perhaps the gap is not too big. You have to be, again, true to yourself. Is the gap too big to cover or not? And walking through this path of what I do best, what I love doing, what my strengths are, and what I love doing cannot lead you to failure. Start with that.
I love it. It's good advice. You know what she knows. She knows what she said. Noah, this was so awesome. I'm so excited to see all the things you do. I mean, in such a short amount of time, you are just making serious moves, starting revolutions. I'm super excited. It motivates me a lot personally, and it's fascinating to me. It's exciting for me. So I'm really excited for you, and I'm proud of you. And how can people follow you, stay connected? I know you said something about a Medium account or maybe F2s. So where can people stay up to date with what you're up to?
Definitely. So first I'll say that I'm humbled and honored that what I say matters to anyone. So thank you, Stephanie. And definitely LinkedIn, Medium, F2 Venture Capital, LinkedIn, F2 Venture Capital, Medium, my own Medium and LinkedIn, which are pretty much the same because Yaffa, our content marketing manager, does everything. Here, I don't know what's going on in my LinkedIn and my Medium. I'm really working on producing more interesting content in the generous help of Yaffa to take what I think is important and wrap it up in a brilliant way. So try there and I'll make sure to produce interesting.
Yes, just for us. Amazing. Yeah. I'm going to include those links in the show notes. So for people listening who want to follow up with you. So Noah, thank you so much. Noah Matz, everyone. This was awesome. Have a great rest of your day. You're a star. Ugh, I like fangirl to your face. Is it embarrassing or do you like it?
It's great. It's great.
Okay, go good. Thanks, Noah.
Pleasure.
Well, that was quite a wild ride. Obviously, could pick her brain forever. So many things stuck out to me, and I'm curious what stuck out most to you. Giving yourself your own job title. I love that we dove deep into that. This kind of who do you think you are to do that? And I love how she said that that's really the attitude of what being an entrepreneur is. Someone who starts something new, this whole who the F do you think you are thing, which is the core of all of it. And I love how she embraced it you know, despite some uncertainties and vulnerability, took it. This is what she does. And she owned it. I love when Noah said she would sniff out opportunities like a dog. Do I like this? Do I like that? Is this interesting to me? Is it not? I feel like we should all take that. And it's kind of like being more connected to your inner self of what really gets you going and lights your fire. Love what Noah said about counter offers, never accepting things as they are, but reconstructing them so they fit your agenda and what you want, kind of making everyone win. This is great advice, whether it is actually a job proposal or honestly anything, never just accepting things how they are, but being creative and making it in a way that will really be fitting for you as well. Follow Noah and F2VC on LinkedIn and Medium. Links are in the show notes. And that's it for today.